Hello, and welcome to the final installment of our five-part podcast series on the Family Contact Improvement Partnership, or FCIP. Today, for our fifth episode, we're discussing the importance of holding family contact in the parent home. I'm Kristen Clark, and I'm a social worker, and I'm joined by my co-host, Emily Hauck.
Great to be here, Kristen.
So, holding family contact in the parent home is a relatively new practice in the field of child welfare. Traditionally, family contact, or visitation, was supervised in agency settings, but research has found, not surprisingly, that holding these interactions in the family home or in a comfortable home-like setting results in better outcomes for children and families.
Right, and it gives the parents an opportunity to practice and improve their parenting skills in a safe and comfortable setting. And it also allows the children to remain connected to their family's culture.
Our first guest today is Missy Berglund, who is involved in developing the Family Contact Improvement Partnership. She has direct experience working with families too.
My name is Missy Berglund, and I was one of the lucky people to be involved with the Family Contact Improvement Project from its inception, when we were first just doing the evaluation, then got the opportunity to really work on the best practice guide and the curriculum development, and trained the first couple batches of staff who went through the full training, as well as supporting the training of trainers. So this is certainly a project that is very, very near and dear to my heart. So when we think about conducting family contact in the parent home, it's actually more supportive of the child than most of the other environments that we have the opportunity to hold family contact in. Anytime a child is removed from their home, we are actively creating trauma. Remaining connected to your home and your environment, what we hear from young people is that that's really important to them, to know that they're still a part of their family, that that hasn't just disappeared from their life. Think of kids that I worked with when I was doing direct practice, who talked about feeling like they just weren't a part of their family anymore. Not going home, not seeing their parents, not being in their home, that like they just had this sense of stress and not belonging somewhere. So when we think about creating a system that is really not just trauma-informed and trauma-responsive, but also healing-centered, having contact in the home allows us to understand the family more, allows us to see what their traditions and their practices and their interactions and their culture looks like, and keeps the child more connected to that. Those sanitary environments where we might be doing family contact isn't going to allow for the child to see the pictures of their grandparents or the favorite book that they might have read. And those are really those pieces that we think of as just behaviors that might look different in the home, but it's really about ensuring that that family's culture is maintained. And we can't maintain family cultures if we don't allow families to engage in their cultural practices. And cultural practices are the things we do every day in our homes and with our families and in our lives. And so having the opportunity for the caseworker to see the family in the home, for the foster parents if they're helping supervise in the family home, or if there's additional family contact supervisors to be doing that work in the home, you're building those protective factors of resilience, of social emotional competence. You're building those things in that child as you allow that family to continue and grow in healthy and positive interactions with one another in that home, particularly if the home was a place where scary things may have happened. If that home remains this place where just scary things happened, then we're going to have a harder time when kids come home. They're going to have a bigger reaction. But if we're shifting the patterns of family interaction in a positive way in the home, as a part of our work with the family, then really we are practicing that healing-centered approach, right? We're giving the family opportunity to kind of shift their behavior actively. And particularly when we think about how the Family Contact Improvement program is structured, we've asked for families to be doing some of those resiliency practices. So doing those actual resiliency practices in the home, doing activities where they're building relationship and doing those things, those are the healing practices that we know actually builds positive brain growth for people who have potentially been navigating trauma, which we know, again, that our kids who have been separated from their families have been impacted by that trauma. Obviously, we know that there might be situations or circumstances where it's physically unsafe to do contact in the family home. What we know, though, is that a lot of times the things that removed kids from the home, a lot of times we're looking at neglect situations. We remove more for neglect situations than we do any other type of abuse. The lack of capacity for parents to meet needs is why we've removed kids from the home. If what I've been concerned about is a parent not being able to meet their child's needs effectively, how do I ever see them meet their child's needs effectively if they aren't in the home showing me that they can meet their child's needs effectively? There's this core belief that we have to challenge in ourselves about the home is not safe versus the parent needs some opportunity and some space and some support to develop their capacity to make the home safe. But where we have seen incidents where there has been unsafe situations, there has sometimes been this dynamic of where there hasn't been trust between agencies and providers and parents and all of these people. And so the harder we really work to build that trust throughout our process and in our reactions and our relationship with families, then we can come to some really family-centered ideas around what the boundaries need to look like. Maybe you start outside with family contact, that you're going to start at a community park or you're going to start at other places in the community. I think we have to sit down and just have a really open, honest conversation with the families about what is it we're trying to do here? What's the goal? What are they worried about? What do they need to feel comfortable with this happening? Because we're intruding in their home, right, to watch them with their kids. So what do they need for this to feel okay? Having the opportunity to practice shifting behavior in a safe way, having the opportunity to fail at shifting your parenting in a safe way, that's how we can ensure that when kids go home for the long term, that they're going to be safer because parents have gotten to practice. One of my absolute favorite experiences with seeing a family do this was a foster parent. I worked with teen parents for a long time, was a foster parent who would actually sit with the parent during family contact. And they would talk and they would talk and they would do things back and forth with each other. And watching this young mom really learn, not only from watching the foster parent, but from her own interactions with the foster parent, right? It sort of became this became a triad relationship versus this teen mom who really had no exposure to strong infant parenting, to kind of learn and grow and develop her own style and become a really, really incredibly strong parent in her own. But she did that with support from somebody in her home where she was comfortable, where she was going to be parenting this baby. I think we're seeing more and more people recognize how detrimental not making family contact family-centered is, right? That making it agency-centered is not, it doesn't create better long-term outcomes for families. And if truly our long-term goal is supporting kids being safe in their homes with their parents, we can't do that if we aren't allowing kids to be safe in their homes with their parents. So we need to be actively providing those opportunities for that to happen.
I really appreciate Missy's perspective and the way that she describes being family-centered and trauma-informed in regards to how we're facilitating family contact, I think is really important. You know, in my own experience, I've been able to be a family time supporter or parent coach is, you know, what I was doing previously. And I've had the opportunity to do that both in a home-like setting and in the family home. And you just see a different level of engagement, a different level of collaboration, and a different level of comfort for both the children and the family. And I think it really gives opportunity to build more collaboration with the foster parents, like Missy was talking about too. It's something that I think we really need to be looking at how to do more, which this training helps people do.
And the training we give our staff too is how to give parent coaching and feedback, but it's very difficult to give them those skills if they can't really put them into practice. And to have the foster parent or the kinship placement, which would be even better, come into the home and show them the skills and how it translates and how to build those traditions, it's amazing.
I agree. This is what being family-centered really looks like. It helps us to challenge our own biases and to really critically examine what safety looks like and what is in the best interest of children and families.
One of the things that Missy points out is that people are hesitant to do this kind of contact because it leads to scary experiences or scary experiences happened in the home. But part of helping the child and helping them heal is to learn that there are positive experiences. The home can be a safe place and to learn how to do that.
And I think this is where we have to come back to what we've talked about in some of our other episodes, right? This is one moment in a family's life, and this is not every moment, right? So families have lots of moments, happy moments, safe moments, important moments, and all of those are just as relevant to this one moment that we're intervening in. And so, you know, I think it's really, it's important to think about this a little differently. We're helping to reduce the trauma by making this a safe space and making sure that there's consistency to reduce the trauma that children are experiencing. For our second guest, we invited Susie Sanders from Alaska Family Services. She is a case manager who facilitates family contact with families.
It's really cool to hear about how AFS has completely changed the way they're doing family contact, and they've rented a home that can be used for these visits to make them more comfortable and supportive and actually give them skills like cooking dinners and giving baths and bedtimes.
So my name's Susie Sanders. I work with Alaska Family Services here in Palmer, Alaska. I started out as a facilitator when I first started. Moved up to a case manager is my position now. I do family contact with clients and families. I'm going on my fourth year here. One thing that people need to understand is that home-like environments are great, but you got to consider kids were moved out of the home. So sometimes there are triggers and sometimes there are behaviors that we have to deal with because that's what they remember. Even though they're small, the mind can do a lot of things. So it's very, I believe a home-like setting is great. You want to get them to that point. We do it really well here to set it up like a home-like environment. We wanted to make it to where parents can really plan the visit. You know, they can plan. All they have to do is tell me what they want. Some parents don't have the funds to bring things in, so we can supply that for them. We try to get them to plan activities age appropriate for their children so they can kind of do that bonding time, that connection time with them. We have three different rooms. One is our big community room. That's for bigger families. It's set up with games. It's set up with a TV, so they can do a movie time once a month. We can bring crafts in, so we have paints. We have all different kinds of little crafts they can do, seasonal crafts. We have a table set up, so they can do that on there. We give them all the tools, you know, the glue, the scissors, all the different things that they can do. We have another room that's called our baby room. That is for parents who may have just a little one who've just been born, so they could just kind of sit there and bond with their baby. We have toys in each room, but we kind of accommodate to what ages the children are. So we can move things around if we need to. Right now we have just rented a house, and that has a full kitchen, and it has, you know, four rooms. It's a big two-story house. So that is where we're going to be pretty much moving our clients. That will give them more of a kind of a normal type of situation, a normal type of atmosphere, but it'll be different choices that they can do with their kids, but yet in a home with a, you know, we have a kitchen, we're going to have it all set up, you know, with kitchen utensils and stuff. If they want to make cookies, if they want to plan a meal, you know, make mac and cheese for their kids. So that is a little bit more what's going to be kind of what we say home-like here. We're kind of limited here in the agency since we don't have a kitchen here. We do the best we can here with home-like, but it's going to be real interesting to see how the actual rental house is going to go over. I think it'll be more positive and more, I don't know, exciting for the families, because, you know, we want them to bond, and, you know, that's a kind of a good way. Sometimes bonding over food is a big thing. So, but when you have a rental house, I'm really hoping that that will be kind of more of a comfort for them there. Because it's kind of hard to do that here, because it is more of an office environment. Like when you walk in the house, yes, I'll be sitting there with the desk and stuff, but all the other stuff is going to be set up like a home. So I'm really excited to see where it goes. I think it will maybe take some of the stereotypes off of what an agency is. I love working for Alaska Family Services. They really have a heart for all the different programs we do, and we make it as best as we can. We have our guidelines, you know, which is hard to have sometimes, but you have to have those guidelines to get them to succeed. And I think that's our big thing. We want them to succeed as much as we can.
Spoiler alert, it's been going great, and the difference is amazing. We moved into the rental house 3 months ago, and you just cannot believe the difference going from a more structured office-like environment to an actual home makes in the family's day together or time together. Like Susie pointed out, they cook together. They are together for movies. They do things together in a much more relaxed, like couches. There's everything a home has instead of like being very sterile office kind of environment. It'll never replace being in the actual home, but it's definitely a right step in the direction. And, you know, as I mentioned, the difference is amazing between the two types of visits that you have.
Yeah, it's definitely different. I worked in a place that also was doing home-like settings, and it was just incredible to watch the difference and the way that people engaged. It's different than being in one small room that's unfamiliar to everyone and sterile, like you talked about, where everyone is unsure how to behave, unsure of what the expectations are, and then having to adapt to whatever is available to them versus being able to relax and be comfortable. And having a home-like setting available to families, it does exactly what Susie was saying, right? We want people to succeed, and it helps to make it family-led, family-centered, collaborative, and it steps away from being what is most easy, maybe logistically, for agencies to do for families, and ensures that we're giving the best that we have to families. We're making sure that they are getting their needs met in whatever way that looks like. And it's hard to do that in a short time period in an agency setting. This gives people more opportunities to succeed, and that's backed by research.
And Kristen, I'm sure you'll agree, but at the end of the day, we want reunification for these families in the most safe, happy, positive way. And the purpose of all of these podcasts have been leading to the best practices to do that.
Throughout the series, we have looked at all of the different aspects involving family contact. And we've looked at the court system. We've looked at the importance of having culturally centered family contact. We have looked at what true partnership with families really looks like, and how to make sure that foster parents and kinship parents are really a part of that. We hope that this has given you a good picture of what best practices for family contact can look like and how supportive it is to both families and children. This podcast was produced by the Butler Institute for Families at the University of Denver with support from Rock Matsu and the Family Contact Improvement Partnership. Production by Sarah Roman, story collection by Krista Doty, with support from Carol Wilcox, Emily Houck, and me. I'm Kristen Clark.